Welcome back to the Take Flight podcast with me, Mark Whittle, and the third instalment of this amazing collaboration with the boys at Mana Gym. You guys know the drill now. Last month, Mana launched their brand new space, MCP, the most unique training facility I've experienced and somewhere that definitely needs to be seen and trained in to be appreciated. The images look unbelievable online. You can see everything there at MCP_Mana. You can see what it's all about. Dark, gritty, you get a proper workout there, but going and experiencing it in something completely different. In honor of the launch, the guys hosted a 24 in 24 event. 24 participants taking part in 24 workouts over 24 hours, and it was all in support of the amazing charity Rock to Recovery. I was asked by the boys to be part of the launch, which I gladly accepted. Having gotten closer and closer to them over the last few months, I'm becoming more and more of a supporter and even an advocate of what they're doing, so it was a real honour to be involved. I sat down with five peak performers in their fields on the night and had some amazing conversations. The first two are live now with Charlie Green and Zoe Williams, four-time medalists of the Invictus Games. And the third person I sat down with at 24 in 24, and the guest for episode 46 of the Take Flight podcast, is Steele Johnson, aka the Magic Marine. For those of you that have listened to Take Flight for a while, you'll know I've travelled to LA twice, San Diego, Tampa, Dubai, and all across the UK in the last year and a half, in search of the most impactful conversations with the most amazing people. I've spoken to the best athletes in the world, the most successful entrepreneurs, but this chat right here might be my favourite conversation of all, and I don't say that lightly. My brother always used to laugh at me as a kid because I used to come out of every single cinema visit saying that was my new favourite film. And sometimes I do feel like that with every episode I record for Take Flight, but I really think this could be my favourite. Steele is an ex-Royal Marine Commando who was in the military for 10 years, with the last 2 years as a medic in the Special Forces as part of the SBS, the Special Boat Service. During his 10-year serving, he had deployments in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Steele shares openly on this episode his experiences in both and some of the more difficult things he went through during those tours. But believe it or not, his most difficult time to date wasn't something he witnessed in Afghan or Iraq. It was something more recently that happened to him when sadly he lost his dad. And I have to thank Steele massively for being so open about this part of his life. It was a really emotional chat. You can hear the emotion in there. I've listened back to it twice while I was editing it, and both times I choked up. But it was something that's so powerful because we've all experienced death of loved ones. So thank you so much for sharing, Steele, because I think you're going to help so many by opening up. As with a lot of suffering, positive things come the other side. By going through this, it led to a pretty deep period of reflection for Steele, which allowed him to realise what actually mattered in his life and what he actually valued. And he decided that those things were magic, motorbikes and surfing. And why not? He'd practised magic since he was a kid, on and off, and got heavily back into it while in the Marines. And this is what led to the Magic Marine. He now performs at copious events, does loads of weddings, and loves what he's doing day to day. In his downtime, he travels with his brother and goes surfing. It sounds like a fucking great life to me. If you know anyone at all who's disillusioned with what they're doing, lacking fulfillment, or going through hardship, please send this episode to them, because I really think it will help. Steele's one of the most genuine, kind people I've met. I love chatting with him so much. If you enjoy listening to the episode, please reach out to both of us at MarkWhittle_TF and at The Magic Marine, both on Instagram. We'd love to hear what you think. Without further ado, please enjoy one of the most heartfelt, special conversations that Take Flight's released with the absolute hero, Steele Johnson, aka The Magic Marine. Steele, welcome to the Take Flight podcast.
Good evening.
By the way, probably the best and coolest name we've had on the podcast.
Thank you.
Steele.
Yeah, it's a bit of a random one, and it wasn't intentionally a magic name. It was a nickname that I got in the Marines a few years back, and then when the magic was starting to take off, I chatted to some of the lads, and I said, oh, I want to have a magic name, you know, like Dynamo has and this sort of thing, and they said, well, Steele's already established, why don't you roll with that? So I was like, okay, do I keep it, don't I? And it just kind of, it was already... I'd already changed over on Facebook and that sort of stuff. So some of the lads were calling me Steele, and it just kind of carried on and became a magic name.
But now it's the Magic Marine, right?
Yeah. I think that's... I heard someone call me at once. Oh, look at that. He's the Magic Marine. And I thought it's just a great title to sum up exactly what I'm doing. Although it does sometimes get confused with Magic Mike. The Marines having their reputation
very different show,
you know, the shenanigans that go on. But Different show.
Well, mate, I'm so glad to be sitting down with you. We met at Woody's book launch a few months ago now.
Yeah.
And we had a brief chat. It was nice to meet you there and saw some of the magic there, which
is
brilliant.
It's great to be there. I mean, to come and perform at the Shard. I mean, these are all, like, I never imagined the magic would take off like this. I never imagined I would be donning the suit and waistcoat and jumping into these absolutely fabulous venues and performing for fantastic people. I didn't. I couldn't have imagined it going the way that it has gone.
How long have you been doing the magic then? Like full time?
I've been doing the magic full time for 2 years. But it's sort of, I guess I liked it as a little kid, but back then, like as a young lad, back in that day, it was a bit geeky. So I left it alone because I wanted it to be cool. And then it wasn't until I joined the Marines. I was a young Marine up at 4-5 Commando, and I saw another guy doing some sleight of hand magic. And I'd seen trick cards, but I'd never seen the skill set of sleight of hand. And this guy was doing his sleight of hand magic, and I thought, wow, that's awesome, I want to do that. And from that point, that's when I started, and it's something that throughout my career I kept coming back to and kept coming back to, and I guess naturally progressed with it to a point where people were then saying, oh, you know that magic you're doing, can you come along and do that at my event or my, you know, a dinner or a wedding or that sort of thing. And it just naturally kind of, the ball started rolling with it.
Yeah, amazing, man. So what drew you to that? Because I've seen magic tricks and I think, oh, that's really impressive, like, that's good. But what was it that drew you to it and go like, do you know what, I actually want to do it myself?
I guess it reignited the little flame, the passion I'd had for it when I was a young lad.
Okay.
So it obviously reignited that. And I think that where I was at the time, I was based up in Arbroath, which is quite a isolated barracks. And so it was one of those things where I had a pack of cards with me and we'd sit down and we'd be watching TV and I'd just be like flicking through the cards, it'd be funny, I'd just be practicing. And it was, I enjoyed it, I was sort of passionate about it and wanted to progress. And one of the guy that sort of first got me into it, he gave me a book which is like the foundation for card magic, and so I just started working through that. Nice. And enjoyed it.
So you were still in the Marines at this point?
Yeah, this was early on in my career. Maybe like 2008 or 2009, about that sort of time.
And how was it received in such like an alpha environment? Like,
nah, I think the lads enjoyed it. Really? Yeah, I'd say, hey, check this out, you know, and we'd just do a little bit. And it always seemed well received. And I think that's what made me continue with it, and even now today, why I still continue with it, because I can go up to a group of complete strangers, and you know, as I do at an event, and I introduce myself, and I say, "Oh, check this out," and then just watching their faces, their sort of the amazement and the joy that it brings, that makes me buzz, and I'm like, "Oh, that's brilliant!" I'm really happy that they're enjoying watching what I'm doing, what I'm performing. So that's one of the main reasons why I continue to do it.
Yeah, I suppose it's like what a lot of performers talk about. You get that immediate feedback that you're impacting someone and making someone smile.
So visual, just watching them. And especially now I've got my little brother working with me who comes along to the events, and he sort of films and takes videos, and to be able to watch it back from a different angle, it's and to see people's reactions there, like, oh, that went down well. I'll do that again. It's good.
Oh, amazing, mate. So you spoke briefly there about how you had a sort of interest or passion in magic when you were younger.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the story of, like, as a kid growing up and then what it was that actually led you into the military.
Ooh, well, I guess when I look back, it was inevitable I was going to go into the military because I always enjoyed being outside and just, you know, like shooting and sort of being physically active.
Where did you grow up?
It was in sort of North Yorkshire.
Okay.
Out in the countryside.
You said shooting there as in like...
air rifle. Okay. Just, although I did shoot my bro with a bow and arrow. I think he's probably one of the few blokes in 2019 that's got an arrow wound to his face. He's got stitches that's below his eye. So that was a good shot back then. So it was inevitable I was going to go into the military. I'd sort of dismissed the Marines initially because I felt I wasn't good enough for it. And I ended up joining, I first joined up an army infantry regiment, a reserve unit, and then went on to go like a full-time reservist. This was, I joined in maybe 2002, then went full-time and went out to Iraq in 2004 to Basra.
Basra.
And I was sort of based in Basra city centre at a little place called Old State Buildings. And I just remember thinking, I was a rear gunner on the Snatch Land Rovers as a mini-me gunner. And I remember we used to get like IDF'd a lot with, they would like just bomb us with Chinese rockets and stuff. And I remember like as a young lad thinking, what am I doing out here? You know, and I came back from that tour and it's like probably the first time I'd earned a bit of money. And it coincided with one of my longest friends, friendships. This guy had finished university and I had a bit of time and I've got some money. Let's go traveling. And it was when we were traveling, I was thinking to myself, I want to give the Marines a shot. I kind of hated it when I was in Iraq. I was like, what am I doing here? And then you get that retrospective enjoyment on things. And I kind of forgot how bad it was. And I thought, you know, I want to give the Marines a shot. And we traveled around the world, and as we were traveling, I just started training for it. And we,
How did you get out of the? So you're in the army as an infantry soldier in Iraq.
Yeah.
How did you leave the army?
Well, because it was because I was sort of in the reserves and I'd done a full time reserve thing. Okay. So when we came back off the tour, I went back into just being a reservist, and then I took. I forgot what it's called now, like a sabbatical. I asked for some, so I was still in,
yeah.
But I had a.
Give you like some leave too.
Yeah. And then when I came back from that, I was like, look, I want to apply for the Marines.
So, mate, that's amazing. Again, obviously, just demonstrating the level of ambition that you've got. But interested to know a little bit more about that trip to Iraq, because you kind of just like casually just mentioned that you're stood on the back of a Land Rover, getting bombed,
I guess I didn't really know what I was doing when I went out there, and it was all a bit, I don't know. I didn't super enjoy it. So,
you're just thrown in the deep end?
Yeah, I think so. I think as a, obviously, because the way that I'd gone into it as, I guess I hadn't had like the full training. I mean, look, going through the Marines, obviously then I went through the full Marines training. Yeah. It's like, wow, I was, I guess, mega unprepared for that. You know, I was super naive about it. I didn't really know what I was doing or the reasons why we're doing anything. It wasn't super fun.
Yeah. Did you return there after you've obviously you went through the Marine training? I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. Did you go back out there?
No, when I passed out into, so I got back, applied for the Marines, went into training, I went straight up to 4-5 and then went straight out to Afghan. Quite quick succession of leaving the training. I didn't go back to Iraq. I went to and then Afghan was like a lot worse.
Really? So mate, if you're happy to share, I'd love to hear more about Afghan. But before we go into that, could you tell us a little bit about the training you put yourself through to get into the Marines, and then what it was actually like getting into the setup itself?
So I trained. Obviously, I was at this point now. My parents were living in the Yorkshire Dales. So it was a good training ground, lots of hills and rivers, and I was so determined on getting into the Marines. And I'd go out running, I'd do some weights, and I just really was really keen to get in. Even when I started training, I didn't think I was fit enough to start, but I went in with thinking if I fail for not being fit enough, then I'm just going to get even more fit and go back again. There was no second option. It was, I was going to join the Marines.
Why do you think you wanted to join it? Was there someone in your family or?
No. So my family aren't really military. I think it was after, I don't know how to sort of phrase it, after working with the army, I didn't think I was good enough for the Marines. And then some of the lads, I thought, oh no, I'm more keen. I feel like I'm a bit fitter than these. I want to do more. I want to go for the Marines. I didn't think I was good enough, but actually I want to give it a shot.
Do you think there's an element of, you came through Iraq, survived, lived to fight another day kind of feeling? I don't know if you've heard, there's a There's a, I'm trying to think how they actually phrased it, what the words were, but essentially during the World War II, there was a fear that people in London were going to be terrified during the Blitz and during the bombings. And the people and the civilians who lived in London who refused to flee, that generally speaking, Germans, etc., thought they'd be terrified, everyone's going to leave London, it's going to be terrible, they're going to hate it, life's going to be awful. When the bombings came, yes, some people sadly did die, but the ones that didn't had this whole new belief system about them, this whole new confidence that they were just like indestructible. And actually the morale within the city was really, really strong and really, really amazing. And that's something that people obviously don't think about a lot. It's just like, actually, those near miss things give you so much confidence and so much belief in yourself.
I
don't know whether that's something that, like...
I guess that could be an element into why. I think it'd always been niggling me, though. I mean, there was a guy... When I was going through education, he said to me, "Oh, why don't you join the Marines with me?" And I remember saying to him, "Nah, I can't join the Marines. They're supermen. I can't do that." And I'd put myself down. And then, and then I guess after the tour, I was thinking, "You know what? I reckon I could give this a shot."
Yeah.
But back then I was like in sort of awe of the Marines. I was like, "Wow, these guys are cool."
That's great, though.
And I still am.
But you put yourself in the mix, mate. And when you, again, we talk about a lot here, like you're the average of the five people you spend your time with and whatever that is. Don't be the smartest person in the room, all those things, because you can learn from these people. You can grow from the people that you spend time with and that you're around.
Yeah.
To put yourself in that mix and go into, as you called them, you know, a room full of supermen, superheroes, you're going to learn so much and grow yourself as well. So it's more for you, and credit to you for doing that as well.
Thank you.
So, mate, tell me a little bit about the actual... way that you got into the Marines. What did they put you through? What was the training that they made you go through?
I remember going down for the sort of the PRMC, which is to see if you've got the potential. And I was like, yeah, this is brilliant. You know, and it's at the end of it, you get like a set of boots to break in and they give you a date to sort of start training. And I remember I was just buzzing. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get into training. And I feel like I kind of enjoyed training, but it's probably because I'm forgetting a lot of it because it was pretty hard. But I think it was at that point that something that I'd chosen to do, and I don't think I'd ever felt so driven. I had purpose and direction, which are two key things that I didn't appreciate until leaving, not so long ago. That, you know, having a purpose and having a direction, and obviously the physical fitness and the tribe, we're tribal beings, being surrounded by these lads, you know, be with this, you've got your tribe there, you're all working together, shared hardship, and you know, that sort of all that coming together made I felt like I really achieved something going into it and passing through the training.
Amazing, mate. How do you think people that might not have it now can find purpose and direction?
I think it's quite a tricky one, because when I left, I was obviously very aware that I wasn't going to have a salary, but I felt I can make money. I'll do whatever I can make money. That's okay. But what I didn't appreciate when I left is, then I had no structure to my time. I had no direction. I was then just floating this bumpy transition back onto Civvy Street, where I didn't really know what. So me and my little brother kind of came together, and we only very recently really we started chatting about, we've got to do something, we've got to focus on something, and what do we like doing? We like adventure, motorbikes, magic. Let's do something with that. And we've now got a big plan for next year, which we're going to touch on now or touch on in a bit. So I think back to that question, I think just kind of breaking it down, brainstorming, what do I want to do with my life? Like, what am I doing? What do I want to be doing? And I guess we're lucky in the fact that, I mean, I don't have children yet, and I don't have super commitments. So I don't have those pressures that a lot of people do have.
How old are you?
I'll be 35. Yeah, this month.
35. This month?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. But do you know what I love about that is that you've essentially mapped out a plan of how people can find their purpose. But the first thing you said was, let's talk about the things that we love. We love, what did you say, magic, motorbikes.
And adventure. Yeah.
Mate, that's brilliant. So if anyone out there who feels they haven't got a purpose, write down the things you enjoy doing or the things that you love.
Yeah.
Try and build activities around those.
We'll see if we can, like I said, we can touch on what we've got planned for next year.
Yeah, please, mate.
So we thought, let's put these things together. I mean, my little brother, he was, so we lost my dad like a few years ago, and that kind of really hit the family hard. It feels like a ridiculous thing because it's an inevitable thing. And obviously I reassure myself that it's a lot better for me to lose him than him to lose me, in Iraq or Afghan. Like, that would have really broken my parents. Like, this is a natural way. We're all grown up. It's not like I've lost him as a young lad, but God, it like really, really kicked my whole perspective on life, and it really affected the family. And I noticed my little brother was struggling with things, and his kind of life was falling apart a little bit. And I was like, come on, let's pull together. What do we like doing? We were getting into motorbiking. I used to ride when I was younger, but then we're getting into this motorbiking. And I know we liked the old Royal Enfield, so we're like, but buying them here is a bit cheating. We need to get them from India, because that's where they're made now. So like, why don't we go to India? And then we're like, well, if we got to India, we could like ride them to Beijing, and then get the Trans-Siberian Express to Russia, and then ride them back or something. And then I couldn't find anywhere. I was like Googling. I couldn't find anywhere that would say that you could take a motorbike on the Trans-Siberian Express. So I was like, well, let's ride them out. So then we've planning this route. We're in the sort of planning stages of it now. But linked in with some great contacts who are helping us with it. But if we go to India maybe February time next year, get these bikes, go over to Himalayas, do sort of one of the highest passes near Leh, come down into Pakistan, go up into China and Kyrgyzstan. And I mean, I was just looking through the route the other week, and there's some absolutely amazing places. There's these burning craters that just... these ancient cities, and we thought we'd do this big motorbike adventure from India back to the UK, but we're going to do magic. So we're going to go to these dusty villages, we're going to be doing magic for the locals, but also my brother's a history academic, so he's going to narrate parts of the trip and say, well, this is where Babur did this, this is Genghis Khan, Alexander the Great, these are ancient cities. We're going to sort of the paths that we're traveling on, and then also the history of magic with playing cards coming from China into Europe, getting carried by soldiers, you know, bringing magic into Europe. So we've got like the history of the route, the history of the magic. Me and my bro is these like bearded brothers, Vikings. I don't know. doing this trip, and we thought, yeah, we'll. If we're doing all this, we might as well film it. So let's film it. And then we've kind of thought we can either self-produce something or create a short film. Or if someone is keen, we can, you know, that would think, oh, this might be interesting. Let's get this produced and create a series. You know, so that's
amazing,
mate. That's next year kind of. So I've stopped taking bookings with the magic.
Really?
To focus on this
amazing
motorbike trip.
But how inspiring, man, because like you've essentially gone from a really dark place to thinking, first of all, you've been amazing because you've been supportive to your brother and you've recognised that, and you've obviously been going through a tough time yourself as well. But all you've really done is gone on the internet and gone like, I've got this mad idea, let's try and do something about it.
Yeah.
Like, we can all do that, can't we? But a lot of us don't act on it. Like, all
but like I say, I'm so privileged in that I've got my bro, and I don't have massive commitments. I'm not tied to anything. I'm pretty free. I know a lot of people are then tied into. I see people getting themselves tied into things. You know, they, you know, like cars on finances and you know, all this stuff where they're.
Yeah.
I heard someone call it like renting their life. You know, and they tie themselves into where they've got that much. The outgoings are that high every month. They have to be making the incomes. And at the moment, we're we're like super flexible. I kitted out like this surf shack van when I left the Marines. Like, so my plan was to leave the Marines and travel around Spain and Portugal doing magic around the beaches, around the tapas bars to get a bit of tapas. And then obviously I built this surf shack van, and the magic took off. I didn't expect it to take off. So then I've not ended up going to Spain. I've been coming to London a lot and traveling all around the country doing this, but we've still got I've just taken the van out to Ireland because my partner was doing the Island Ironman, and we had a week out there, then came back through South Wales, had a little bit of a surf and, you know, going in hills, like wild swimming and stuff, and it's just been absolutely beautiful. We're in the van now in London.
You're living in there?
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah. I've got my house, renting my house out, because I don't need to live in it. If I live in the house, then that fixes me in one location.
It's good that you got that, though.
Yeah, well, I thought, when I was earning in the Marines, I thought I need to invest in something as a look forward to.
That's another amazing message, mate. You've said that, you know, when people say they're bound or they're shackled by their mortgage,
yeah,
right? You've essentially said, like, okay, fine, I realise that I need some sort of security or some sort of asset, rented it out, and you're living a lifestyle, mate, that frankly I'm quite envious of.
Also, I'm a super tight Yorkshireman, so I don't want to pay my own mortgage. I don't, and like I say, if I lived in that house, then I've got my mortgage and bills, which means I'm fixed in one location, so I have to get a job to pay the mortgage and the bills, and then that's me tied into a conventional life, which I don't want.
Yeah.
So I'd rather be. One of the things I was craving when I was in the military, I got to this point where I was absolutely just craving freedom and flexibility.
Really?
And that's what I have
now. It's so regimented.
Yeah. Not, I mean, it was just busy. It was busy. So I finished off. I went down the medic route. I was like a trauma medic in the Royal Marines. And then I went, became a Special Forces medic and finished off with the SBS as a squadron medic down there for a short period of time. And it was just a busy time. It was just busy. And I wanted to surf and I wanted to do magic.
Amazing, man. Oh, mate, that's so inspiring, though. I love it.
Yeah.
So, mate, if you don't mind sharing a little bit more about your dad, because I was like, I could tell when you said that, it's like, it's really heavy stuff, isn't it? What happened with your dad?
Like, I was surprised at how much it hurt, you know, like it's, it really hurt. Like, and it's obviously like out in Afghan, lads got killed, and I remember carrying one of the lads back, and I was just thinking, what is going on? You know,
a guy being killed and you carrying him
back? Yeah, we're carrying him back, and I'd patched up a lad as well, because I was like, oh, I want to be a medic, I want to, you know, and this guy, I'd sort of patched him up and then carried him, and then came back and then went on carrying a stretcher with the guy who had been killed. That was super hard. That, you know, I found that really, you know, it's just not a very nice experience. But, and then losing my dad really hurt. And I was like, why? This is an inevitable thing. Why is this hurting so much? So my dad was, I was out in Norway. I came back in February 2013. And my mum said to me, she rang me. She said, oh, your dad's not well. And I was like, oh, what's up? What's up? She's like, he's got cancer. I was like, okay, I'm coming home. And I drove home. I was like, what's all this about? You know, and at the time they were trying to work out what cancer he had. He's like, oh, he's got cancer, but it's an unknown primary source. They didn't know where it'd come from. And by the time it's been detected, it was spread throughout his whole body. So he was diagnosed, and I think like it was like 10 weeks and he passed. And so, I mean, the Marines were really, really good in that they gave me compassionate leave. So I was able to go home and spend time with him, which was beneficial, because if they hadn't, I would have gone home anyway. Like, I would, they wouldn't, and they would have been upset. He was really, really kind and understanding, gave me compassionate leave. I went home and it was just really, I was like, yeah, I'll look after your dad. This is cool. Like, and then obviously just watched his deterioration. And I remember the last time we took him upstairs, and he was struggling a little bit. And I was like, don't worry, Dad, I'll carry you. You used to carry me. So just helped him up. And then, yeah, it was, I think, like that weekend. Yeah, it's pretty. It seemed obviously affected all of us, but it seems to have affected me and my little brother. It really changed my perspective on life. So yeah, me and my bro were like, "What are we doing? Life goes so quickly. Let's just roll with it. It's really, really sort of booted my perspective.
And
changed my priorities in life.
Do you think if that hadn't happened, like, you wouldn't have been doing what you're doing now?
I guess. Sorry, excuse me. No. It wasn't long after that I then got into a bit of a scrap, and then I was getting charged for GBH, and it was a daft situation where I'd walked around a corner and seen one guy getting beaten up by four guys, and I ran over, I punched one of them, pulled the other lads off him. A similar thing had happened to me after I'd come back from Afghan. I'd had six lads jump me and they broke my jaw and I was knocked out. And then I walked around this corner, I saw four guys beating up one guy. I ran straight into it. And the guy that I punched, I broke his jaw. And then I was getting charged for GBH. And I'd meant to, my career, you know, as I'd finished my draft, I was based in North Devon at the time, I'd finished my draft, I was meant to be getting drafted somewhere else, and then all of a sudden I found myself on a freeze draft, on bail for 10 months, my dad had just died, and I had to sell my car to pay for, I thought, shit, I've messed up here, I need to get a private solicitor, I need to get a barrister, I need to, you know, I don't want to lose my career, but then I had to sell my car to pay for it, and I wasn't able to drive home to see my mum, and it was really bothering me. But because I was on a curfew from town, I wasn't allowed in town on this street after 9 o'clock. I was so pissed off at myself, I stopped drinking. I really got into yoga, and I really embraced the surfing. And this was like a changing point in my life, I guess. This is like my priorities had changed after losing my dad. Yeah, I got into surfing and yoga and started reading a lot. And me and my brother chat. I don't know where he's gone.
He's had enough.
He's heard this story before. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, so it's my priorities have changed. And then obviously by the time this court case, it went to Exeter Crown Court and had a trial there. And I remember the judge saying, this shouldn't have come here. This guy was found innocent, defense of another. The judge was like, this shouldn't have come this far. It was just, yeah, that daft situation. But then,
right, thank God that was sorted out.
Yeah. And so obviously then I went off down to Poole as a medic down there. But my mind wasn't really in it then. And then we were going away all the time. It was busy and there's a lot. You don't want to drop the ball. It's high pressure. You're working with a lot of amazing blokes, and you don't want to let them down. So I think there's a lot of pressure there. You don't want to be shit. Yeah. But then you're busy, and I was thinking, I just want to surf and I want to do magic. I don't want to be doing this.
Amazing.
And that's my mind. And then it was time for the next chapter.
Yeah, that's incredible, man. Thanks so much. So
sorry about that, man. I didn't know we were gonna, like,
mate, please.
You know, when you were saying at the start, what should we chat about, and I was like, yeah, we'll just go through it. But I wasn't expecting that, sorry,
mate. Don't apologize, it was amazing, man. It made me cry as well. So right, it's interesting you said that. So a lot of people look for different things when they get into those difficult places. You said that yoga and surfing was one that really
beautiful.
Yeah Do you know what, actually, I've never said this before out loud, I don't think, but when I was, I think, about 15, I was lucky enough, my parents took me to California and I went to a little surf town called Carlsbad.
Yeah.
And have you been there before?
No, I have surfed California, but not, I don't know that.
Okay, place. You should put it on your list, mate. It's not always the best surf, but it's an amazing surf town.
It gets a bit sharky out there, though.
It does get a bit sharky, yeah, mate. Oh, no. Yeah. Actually, I went to La Jolla and there was actually a shark there.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, but didn't get me. So, but just being in the sea that day, there was like a certain feeling of just being very, very relaxed, like way that the waves roll over. And I didn't know it at the time, but for the next maybe 3-4 years, anytime I felt any stress or anxiety, which I wasn't aware that they were the emotions I was feeling, but my brain would automatically take me back to that moment, and I'd picture like the calm rolling waves, and it was just such a relaxing way to, such a great way to change my perception. Yeah, So interested to know like what it does for you and what surfing and yoga has done for you, and were you doing those activities before that happened or not?
I can't remember if I was doing them before. I might have sort of kind of looked at it, but I guess it was this change, a lifestyle change really, because as I was annoyed at myself that I'd got myself in this situation, and it was like not drinking, and I think I just focused on those. It was a nice Devon yoga place. And the surf there is beautiful. I used to drive down before work sometimes, and I remember paddling out, and the sun would be rising. I'd be hitting through the break. I'd be the only one in the water as I'm hitting through the break. I'm like, you know, turning the waves, like splashing up, and like the droplets just glistening on the sunrise. And I was like, that is amazing. This is, I just loved it so much. You know, this, yeah, really. So I really sort of itch. I want to get back in the water. I want to get back in the water. And it's that's why I was like, I wanted just to revolve my life about, you know, traveling the coastline of northern Spain and Portugal. And I've still not got the van down there. although I have just been surfing down in Polzef with some of the lads,
nice,
which has been really good. And then obviously I got a little surf in South Wales just the other day. Nice. It was only small, but it's just really good being back in the water.
Oh, mate, yeah, I bet. We've had Andrew Cotton on the podcast, who's a professional big wave surfer who learned to surf in North Devon.
I'll never do big wave surfing.
No, mate. Well, he's done that Nazaré in Portugal, like the 100 feet wave, some of them.
It's ridiculous.
It's insane. It? Yeah. But yeah, you don't get the relaxing meditative state from doing those.
Have you seen Point Break? The old Point Break? Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
I think that as well. It's like, this is so cool. Patrick Swayze is so cool.
Yeah, but do you know what I think surfing? Surf's Up. Is it Surf's Up? Do you know the cartoon? The Pixar?
I don't know, mate.
Mate, you need to watch it. That's what it's
doing. Yeah.
It's Surf's Up, isn't it? I'm going to have to Google it. Surf's Up with Cody. Come on, guys.
I don't have a TV.
Surf's Up.
Okay. Yeah, I'll look out for that. I probably won't watch it. Got 6 out of 10 there.
6 out of 10 on IMDb, that's brutal. It's a brilliant
you need to get a review on there.
It's got Shia LaBeouf as the voice of Cody.
I like him.
Sold. You got a bit of Shia LaBeouf about you with a beard.
Thank you, I'll take that as a very big compliment.
Yeah,
I think he's a legend. Yeah,
he is a legend, isn't he?
Used to watch him as Even Stevens.
Yeah, mate, I saw a good interview about him yesterday. He's doing a load of stuff again. Similar story, right? He's been through some hardships.
He's a bit of a mad bloke, isn't he?
He's a little bit mad, yeah. But in the nicest possible way.
Yeah.
But he's doing a lot of stuff because he's from LA in California, like giving back in the community, doing like theatre classes and stuff for people who don't get access to those sorts of coaching, those sorts of lessons. So,
fantastic.
Not too dissimilar story from yours, when you want to go and make people smile and laugh by doing magic.
Yeah, so. It's when you look at what people say about, you know, later on in life, and they're saying, instead of gaining for yourself, what can I give? And I don't really know what I can give, but I know that I can perform magic, and that's why I'm pretty rubbish at the magic business, because I sometimes don't charge for gigs. I'm like, I'll come do magic, yeah, that's cool. And I'm like, shit, I need to put the fuel in the van.
Yeah.
And I need to get me and my bro food. So
get to Portugal.
He's still waiting to be paid. He's been working for me since December, and I've not paid him anything yet. So I need to start, sorting the business side of things out.
He must love
being
with
you.
Yeah, he must love being with you as well, and the stuff that you're doing together. Mate, I just think I've got a really close relationship with my brother, so I'd love to be able to work with him every day.
I've got a third brother as well, but he's the conventional one. He's doing really well in his job, and he's got a beautiful wife and two beautiful girls.
Yeah.
And he's very sort of settled with that and doing
that. Is
he
happy?
He doesn't ride a motorbike, and he's got a very trimmed beard.
We've all got beards though.
It was, when I first left, it was horrendous. And I'd be doing weddings, and people would say, "Mate, you need to cut that beard." And I'm like, no, it looks cool. And I look back at photos and I'm like, that's quite bad. Yeah. Although I will be letting it grow for the trip.
Did you have a beard in the Marines?
No, it's sort
they don't
of
allow that.
Clean shaven. Yeah. There were times when it was sort of relaxed on the shaving.
Yeah.
But now I pretty much kept it shaved. But I look back at photos of myself without a beard, I'm like, can't go back to that.
Well, mate, I know you said that there were some times where it was pretty rough out in Afghanistan when you were part of the Marines, but were there up times? Were there positives?
I mean, yeah, I think the Marines in general has given me such a solid foundation to be moving on to the next chapter of my life. I look at the type of bloke I was before I joined the Marines, and then I look at how my life is now and the opportunities that are presented to me from the lads. It's a very close brotherhood. I think it's absolutely amazing, and it's so the upside, just like I said, we're tribal beings. We are, and I think that in the world today we're lacking a lot of community. Mm. We're very isolated. We isolate ourselves, and it's, yeah, we should be hanging out more. And in the Marines, you've got a lot, just this bunch of like-minded lads who are into their fitness. You work together, you're living together, you go out for drinks, you eat together. If lads have problems, you kind of talk to each other. And it's, yeah, it's just this brotherhood. And even, like, leaving, it's the brotherhood's still there. There's guys that I've not served with, and I meet them and, like, oh, you're a bootneck, you're a Marine.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, cool. And then it just, like, it opened doors. You know, they just, mate, if you need to ever stay at my house, or come meet me for a drink, you know. So I think, yeah, good times. There are good times. It is good hanging out with the lads.
Yeah, mate, it's amazing. I think, yeah, I've never been in the military, but it's in that way I can relate with sport. Like, the biggest thing I miss from football was the camaraderie, just the banter, the chat, like the laughs, and the physical side of it as well. Playing football, obviously, you have the physical exercise that you get with.
You're going for a run every morning. Yeah. And you're lifting the weights, and it's fantastic. It's nice. such a good brotherhood.
Yeah. All right, mate. So we do the same three questions at the end of every episode.
Okay. Yeah.
So we do these to give listeners something that they can incorporate into their lives, hopefully that's going to help them drive their performance. So the first one of these is there anything you've come across or discovered recently that you're particularly excited about?
For me, obviously, just had this trip back in the van and been doing, like, this free swimming, wild swimming. I don't know what they're sort of...
Like free diving?
Not free diving. No, just swimming in open water, like streams and lakes. And just... Getting up early on the morning, like, so I'm trying to bring back sort of discipline and structure to my life, and I'm like, right, get up early, just get out for a run, and then I mean, me and my bro, we sort of came across, like, cold showers, and my mate was, right. I've got a mate who's so driven, and he talks about cold showers as, but just because if you say go have a cold shower, you have this little voice in your head that goes, no, I don't want a cold shower. I'll have one tomorrow. I'll go, you know, and it's like, shut up, you. This is, as Tony Robbins said, this isn't a debate. I'm not here to debate with you. We're going in that he has a cold plunge pool. So just trying to get some discipline back in. And obviously, just it's been such a beautiful drive in Ireland and South Wales, and just jumping in the waters. I don't like encourage it because it could be dangerous or something like that. But it's just been beautiful getting into having a swim on a morning.
Mate, it sounds incredible. I've been doing more open water swimming myself. I'm doing the Henley River swim.
Are you really?
I think it's in 2 weeks, mate. I need to do a longer swim because I'm going to struggle.
How far is it?
It's only 1.5K, but that's still enough. And all I do is put little short swims in the pool, so I need to.
Are you in a wetsuit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I found swimming in a wetsuit is so much easier, I think, for a bloke, because we naturally sit in the water. It's sort of with our legs hanging down, and a wetsuit just brings us horizontal.
Yeah.
And also, you just seem to glide so much easier.
Yeah, it does help. But do you know what I found? I don't know where you found this, though, but it made my forearms burn so much more, because obviously you're heavier with a wetsuit on.
Right, okay.
So when you're pulling through the water, I found that very quickly my forearms would get fatigued quicker. But yeah, the cold water thing, mate, it's literally... With my meditation, best thing I do every day.
Yeah. Do you meditate every day then?
I try to. It's like the only thing that really...
It's tricky, isn't it?
It is hard, mate,
It's like, why is it so tricky to take 1 minute, 3 minutes?
Which you know is going to benefit you.
Yeah, just to sit down.
Because we're programmed just to keep going, aren't we?
Yeah. And I think it's conditioning. We've been conditioning. So for the last 35 years, I've been conditioning myself to roll through my life without meditating. So then to try and bring that in, I think that's why. So just trying to get some structure and get some discipline and sort of do the things that we know are good for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more, mate. So on that point, perfect segue. So the second question is, if there was a habit or routine that every one of the listeners should incorporate into their day that's going to help them, what would it be?
I think it's really nice when you got to sort of get up and just get out of bed. I find it nice just going, like literally just run for 10 minutes, come back, and then just stretch. But even if you don't do the run, just to get up and just do, I do sort of four breaths, reach up and then just hang down, sort of ragdoll pose. Just kind of stretch the back out and just kind of loosen up a bit. And I think, and then if you can, you know, sort of kind of four salutations to the sun, just a little stretch out, and then maybe just sit and just try and do like a smally meditation.
Yeah.
I think that's a very, if you could kind of incorporate that into your daily routine, just do it just before you clean your teeth, so you're just kind of getting it at the same time, get that consistency. You can build it up later, but just get even you just do a little bit of stretching. I think it just feels really nice. Just feels really nice way to start the day.
Yeah, mate, amazing. It's calming me down thinking about it. I think, do you know what I find is interesting? Is like, I've heard someone talk about it before as well. It's like, look at the way that dogs get up in the morning.
Yeah.
Like so my dog sleeps on the floor
next
to my bed. So she's fucking brilliant. She will sleep as long as I sleep, which is ideal. So as soon as I get out of bed, she gets out of bed. Yeah. The first thing they do is they shake and then stretch, really long stretches out. And that's just like, that's not like, they haven't been programmed to do anything differently. That's just like a natural instinct for them. It's like, when they wake up out of bed, the best thing to do is to stretch.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, when they do that, I'll try and do it though.
Yeah.
All right, mate, so the last of these three is, there was two versions of yourself. Imagine going back to a time that was particularly difficult. It could be a time that you've been in the Marines, or it could be a time of your family. What's the key differentiator between those two versions? One of them went on to have the success that you've had, change your outlook on life, change the way you see things, and go on this journey as a magician, go on this journey and find new places to surf and have all these amazing experiences. And the one who wouldn't have been able to do that.
You can't be a victim. So you can't go, oh, poor me. Like this is life, this is happening. Like, it's just rolling. You can't have your internal narrative of being a victim. If we don't have that and we just take responsibility for what we're doing, then I think that helps.
Yeah.
My brother sort of teaches me a lot.
Yeah. He told you all of it. That ownership thing, innit?
Yeah.
Okay, that's amazing, man. Okay. Mate, just before we finish, one more. What's your favourite magic trick?
What have you seen?
Which ones have I seen? All the ones you did at Woody's, Woody's book launch.
Yeah.
I didn't see the ones that you did tonight.
Okay, mate.
I didn't have a good enough view.
I'll show you after this. But, okay. Just a little routine. I'll do it for you two. Just two cards selected and kind of just rub one into the other. I think it's a very visual change.
Yeah.
Also, just changing the colour of the pack of cards. And then...
The colour of the whole pack.
Yeah. And then I like the stuff with fire, just producing things from fire.
That's sick.
Have you seen anything with fire?
No, because you told me about this, again, the last time that we met, the first time that we met. Yeah, mate, that'd be brilliant. I'd love to. All right, mate, I just want to acknowledge how much of an absolute legend I think you are. I've absolutely loved speaking to you. And thanks so much for sharing the story, man. It really touched me, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, no. Well, thank you for coming and asking me to talk. I didn't sort of expect it to be like that, but it's been really nice chatting to you too.
Thank you so much, Steele. You absolute legend. I can't thank you enough. I hope you're somewhere on a beach or about to go surfing or performing your magic. When we finished recording, Steele actually said he feels like we're best friends, and that happens a lot. When you have a really deep conversation with someone, it's one of the best things that comes out of the podcast. You have a real connection with someone after an hour and a half talking and sharing stuff that you probably don't talk about too often. It's definitely one of those stepbrothers moments. If you want to book Steele, and I recommend you do, I've seen him perform twice now, firstly at Woody's book launch and second at The Manor 24 and 24. You can do at www.magicmarine.com or just go to his Instagram page at The Magic Marine.
One of the reasons I started the Take Flight podcast was because I felt like I was on the wrong path, I was on the wrong journey, and I wasn't doing what I'm supposed to do. And I feel way more aligned with what I'm supposed to be doing and why I'm here, with doing this podcast and doing the events and the other stuff that it's leading to. Steele is by far one of the most impressive people I've met, because you could just tell that he loves what he's doing. He seems very happy, and although at times that episode and the conversation was quite intense and quite deep, let me tell you that when you sit across from him, he's a guy who knows exactly who he is. Travelling offers so much, and he gets to do a lot of that, and I think you can change your life when you go on holiday or go on a particular trip somewhere. And I wanted to recommend a book to people who felt inspired by this conversation or felt like they might want to be doing something similar. Not be shackled by their mortgage, not be stuck in the life that they're in now. There's a book called Vagabonding. It's one that Tim Ferriss talks about regularly. It's in one of his recommendations, and it's something that I've looked to in the past, and it gives a step-by-step action-orientated guide as to how you can ultimately vagabond. A vagabond is defined as a person who wanders from place to place without a home or job. That can sound quite negative, but really what a vagabond is, in my opinion, is someone who's finding themselves. And this book is something that allows you to do that. It allows you to financially look at how you're going to do it. Organisation-wise, help you learn what the best way is to go about organising and planning something like this. So if you feel like you're stuck somewhere, read this book. Reach out to Steele as well, as I'm sure he'd love to hear from you and love to help. Or go and join the boys at Manor, because they're absolute legends. I know you know how I feel about them already. Go and speak with Louis Watts, Charlie's brother. He's running the sales team there and he's a top guy. He'll be able to help you out. Often when we do feel lost or unfulfilled or lacking direction, it's because we want to feel more aligned or more in touch with our values. And often being a part of a community that has the same values as you, it makes you feel like you've got more of a purpose. Manor does it for me. I'm sure it would do it for you as well. I've droned on enough at the end of this episode, but I really hope you enjoyed the chat. There's two unbelievable guests coming in the next 2 weeks. Absolute banging episodes. Aldo Kane, hero, if you don't know him, get to know him. And Victoria Pendleton, who I'm sure you'll be familiar with. She's actually just been on Fern Cotton's podcast as well. But you might hear a different perspective on this one. But until then, stay positive, stay motivated, and take flight.